I'm losing my mind just a little.
It's time now for Setting the Record Straight on KOHI with Melinda Bernard. You can call the show now at 503-397-1600 or toll free at 877-397-1632. The opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of KOHI, staff, management, or sponsors. Now, here's Melinda.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Setting the Record Straight. Happy Friday. Carol and I are here with a great show. This morning, we are talking about confined animal feeding operations, what that means, and what that's going to look like, not just for the state of Oregon, but for all of us. So joining me this morning, we have several guests. We have Sienna Chrisman. We have Starla. Starla, I lost your last name somewhere in the mix there. I'm so sorry. And we have Kendra Kimbaroskis. Did I do that right? All right. Okay. Woo, that I always trip that one up. Anyway, I just want to thank all of you for coming on this morning. And what we're talking about when we're talking about confined animal feeding operations, in one instance, we are talking about chickens, lots and lots of chickens. And before we even get into that, Sienna, can you kind of give us an overall picture of what a consolidation agriculture looks like, and why are we seeing, or will we be seeing, a lot of these outfits heading towards Oregon?
Sure. Yeah. Thanks so much for having all of us. Yes. So consolidation in agriculture overall, really our food system has become one of the most concentrated and consolidated sectors of the economy, although it's a thing that we often don't think about, although increasingly in the last few years we have really seen evidence of that consolidation. So what that consolidation really means is that we have like 300 million American eaters, along with workers and others, kind of on one side of the equation. And then we also have the farmers, about 2 million farmers on the other side of the equation, right? They're producing for us. And in between those two sides, there is a very, very small little hourglass that is a tiny little passage that is controlled by just a few major corporations that are multinational. And what they have found is that by consolidating a lot of the pieces of the supply chain under their umbrella, then they are able to have more control over their operations, over quality to some degree, and largely over price. They've really been able, they've found that this is really a way for them to make a lot more money. What this means for us as eaters and as people who live in rural communities and are connected to the land and are concerned about our health is that mostly we're quite disconnected from our food, and mostly we're just connected to these really big corporations, and they're the ones that have the say over kind of almost everything that we eat. We really saw that like at the beginning of the pandemic, for example, when just a few pork slaughterhouses closed because of COVID infections. And as a result, as a result of the closure of like three packing plants, we were suddenly seeing shortages of bacon and other pork products at the grocery store. So it's that bottleneck that is really the issue in consolidation. And to feed those kind of the bottleneck of processing that's become really large scale now, increasingly we have these very large farming operations, livestock growing operations, that the easiest thing to feed into these large scale processors. It's really easy for them to deal with these large scale farming operations.
Okay, thank you. And so why are we seeing interest? Why is Oregon all of a sudden becoming a location for some of these outfits?
That is, I'll have Kendra speak a little more to that, but largely it has to do with the policy and regulatory environment. That tends to be what really directs, it makes different operations like decide where to go, is really based on like how much water is there and what the policy environment is. So Kendra can speak to a lot of, to some of that more specifically.
Thank you. Kendra, you are the Senior Director for Agriculture and Food Systems for the State Innovation Exchange. So I'm guessing that you've been following not just the local issues, but also some of the bills in the legislature.
Yes, that's correct. Thank you so much for having me. I, in addition to working for the State Innovation Exchange, I am a farmer in Sia, Oregon, and my husband and I were we farm about 70 acres. We have a pasture-based livestock operation. We raise cattle, we raise goats, we raise hogs. Occasionally we raise chickens. But yes, we've been, now our communities become central in basically a ground zero fight against these corporations that are coming into our community because of the consolidation and because of some of the things that Sienna outlined. And we're seeing our fight right now show up in our legislature in the form of a few different bills with the hopes of being able to push back against some of these corporate interests that are coming into our state.
Okay, so let's talk about, where do you want to go first? Let's talk about what are you looking at? Who is interested in coming into Oregon?
Yeah, I think that's a great place to start, Melinda. So about 2 years ago, our community, we sort of by chance, there was a farm that was sold, and the neighbors had saw some folks working on the ground, and they went over to introduce themselves as the new neighbors. And we found out that these weren't new neighbors, that these were actually contractors for an industrial poultry company called Foster Farms that was coming in on this farmland to basically excavate to build these giant 600 by 60 poultry houses, which would cover this beautiful prime farmland to raise chickens. And this was the very first time that anybody had ever heard that these poultry houses were coming into our community. And so, you know, we didn't get notice. There was no public noticing about this. It was largely a community rumor mill where, oh my gosh, like, why are these chicken farms coming into our community? And so fast forward a year, and we found out that in addition to the first one that was intending to raise 3.4 million chickens, there were two additional facilities that were looking to raise 4.6 million chickens per year. And so now we're in a situation where within a 10-mile radius of our community, we are seeing approximately 13 million birds proposed. And what we've learned over the last couple of years is that our laws in Oregon are antiquated, and we've done a really good job in Oregon of protecting farmers. But where we've done a really bad job in Oregon is defining when a farm becomes a factory. And so we as residents, many of which who have been here for literally generations farming this land, have no rights. All of the rights are in the hands of the corporation. And so that's largely what we're trying to change. And I'm happy to talk more about the bill, but maybe I'll stop and see if you have any specific questions about what's happening in our community.
Yeah. Wow, that's a lot of chickens. A lot of chickens.
And it's a lot of poop too. Right.
Like, yeah. We're gonna get into the nitty gritty of that. I'm just stunned, and I'm guessing that these chickens are going to be housed in small barns, or I don't even know what you would call something that could hold 4.5 million chickens.
So we're calling them warehouses. Like, these are literally warehouses that are covering prime farmland, and what we've come to find out is the. And so maybe I'll just talk a little bit about kind of the ownership structure. That this is actually, Foster Farms was purchased by a global holding company called Atlas Holdings. And so this is not a local production. This is a global holding company that is looking to bring these chickens in, and they are essentially, they own the chickens and they're renting space in warehouses to have them produced. And so these are warehouses that are 600 feet long by 60 feet wide. And there are approximately going to be 46,000 chickens in each warehouse, and somewhere between 12 and 16 of these warehouses at each site.
Oh, my word. Okay. We're going to take a quick break. We come back, we're going to talk about the nitty-gritty and get the poop in the scoop on this these chicken operations. So stay with us. This is Setting the Record Straight. We'll be right back.
Need towing? Call Grumpy's Towing, 24-hour emergency service, providing jump starts, winching and recovery for autos, trucks, to boats. And Grumpy's Towing is equipped to service large trucks to semi-trucks. Grumpy's Towing is here to give you prompt service, and they work with most insurance companies. When you need help, remember Grumpy's Towing. That's the name for 24-hour service. Call 503-543-5533. Grumpy's Towing, 503-543-5533. Attention veterans, as a veteran, there are certain benefits available to you. There are even benefits that extend to your loved ones. What will your family do when you pass? Will they know what to do? Who to call? Thankfully, there's a program that gets you the information you need and answers those questions for those you love. It's called the Veterans Memorial Program and was created by Columbia Funeral Home here in St. Helens. The number to call, 503-397-1154. So call Columbia Funeral Home today to receive your complimentary Veterans Final Wishes Organizer and free consultation to learn about your benefits. 503-397-1154.
Save your gas. Use our pass. If you commute to Portland every day, you're probably spending more in 1 week than a 1 month pass with CC Rider. So check it out today. Call us at 503-366-0159. Save your gas. Use our pass.
NMLS 116407.
This is Matt McHugh from Cascadia Home Loans with a special announcement from Columbia Pacific Food Bank. Columbia Pacific needs volunteer drivers. Volunteer for a shift now. Shifts are just 1 day a week between 7:30 and 10:30 a.m. No CDL is required. You just need a driver's license. Go to cpfoodbank.org and click volunteer to help feed Columbia County now.
Why don't you just meet me in the middle? I'm losing my mind just a little.
It's Setting the Record Straight on KOHI with Melinda Bernard. Call the show now at 503-397-1600.
Carol and I are chatting this morning with some folks. We are discussing confined animal feeding operations, but today we are specifically talking about chickens and millions of chickens that are being proposed to being raised in what Kendra was just talking about as or defined as warehouses, and what that means for our natural resources and all our water, all kinds of things. So I want to get back to our conversation. And once again, if you are just joining us, Kendra Karambauskas is with the, I'm just going to let you say your title, Kendra.
Yeah, thank you, Melinda. Kendra Karambauskas, I'm Senior Director for the State Innovation Exchange. But in addition to that, I'm a farmer in rural Linn County. I farm about 70 acres on Thomas Creek.
Great. So let's talk about this. So once again, currently there are how many operations proposed in your area?
So within a 10-mile radius of where I'm sitting right now, there are three chicken poultry operations being proposed that total 13 million birds being raised per year in approximately 44 barns. Now, there is an additional poultry operation about 30 miles north of us in the community of Aurora that will have an additional 3.4 million birds. But in our local community, we are threatened by these 13 million birds, and specifically my farm we have 4.6 million birds proposed just upstream from where we pull our irrigation water from.
Let's just focus on the ones in Scio that are proposed to come in. Where is the water coming for these animals?
So this is a really an interesting point. So I mentioned in the last segment that our laws in Oregon are antiquated. So we have done a really good job of protecting our farmers by putting some great laws on the books to ensure that family agriculture can remain. What we have not done is really in law defined when a factory becomes when a farm becomes a factory. And this can't be more evident than in our water laws. And so, for example, in Oregon, we have something called the livestock watering exemption. So that means that if you're a farmer and you have, let's say, 50 cows and you water those cows from your domestic well, you can do so without having to seek an additional water right. That's smart, right? Like, that's important. I've got cows. I should be able to water them from my well. But what we never did is we never capped how many animals you can water from a domestic well. So one huge glaring problem with these chicken farms that are coming in is that they're moving into our community, they're drilling wells, and they're going to be pulling out water for millions and millions of chickens, unregulated, unmitigated, not measured. And at this point in time, we're very concerned that the water that's going to be withdrawn from these operations are going to impact the existing farmers who also rely on that water. And for example, so the creek that I live on is called Thomas Creek. It's not a creek that is snow fed. It's not coming from the glaciers up in the mountains. It's a ground fed creek. And so we're concerned that our surface water and our groundwater are hydrologically connected. And so what happens when you have this new source withdrawing water for livestock unmitigated, what happens to not only the existing wells in the community, but what happens to all of the downstream users who rely on that water when the water is gone?
Right, right. Now I want to go over right now to Starla. Starla, Becker Tillinghast. Starla, you live on the creek. You're an RN, and you used to farm cattle. Is that right? Dairy cattle?
I worked on dairies. Yeah.
Okay. And your concern? Do you have the same concern that Kendra has about water usage and what that might mean for your wells?
What it means already for the neighbor wells on Thomas Creek near this proposed site is when they went to drill the wells on the proposed site, the neighbor's wells actually produced muddy water. They're connected. That's very concerning. I also live downstream on Thomas Creek, where five generations of my family have been in clear water all through the summer. I'm very worried about the contamination risk.
Right. Okay. Thank you. So, okay, besides the amount of water that enormous operation, just even one of these operations would take, much less three, what about the amount of manure that would be produced by raising 4.5 million chickens yearly?
Yeah. Well, so, and this is another problem with our laws. So in Oregon, when chickens poop, we call it dry litter in Oregon. When cows poop, we call it a liquefied manure system. And we, as far as the Department of Agriculture is concerned, there are different requirements in how that manure is handled. So like our dairy farmers here locally have something called an animal waste management plan, where they literally have to track every drop of manure. The agency needs to know where that manure is going, which fields it's being spread on, what types of crops are being fertilized with it to ensure that the manure is being used at agronomic rates. But when it comes to these quote unquote dry litter operations, the response from the agency is to allow these facilities to just quote unquote export this manure. So once that manure leaves the farm and changes hands, we have no idea where it's going. It could be going on the same field. It could be, you know, being sent to different parts of the state and put in communities that have groundwater issues already. So we just don't know. And that is a glaring hole. And so that's one of the major issues that we think needs to be addressed in Oregon, is that there needs to be a level playing field. If you're going to be requiring the dairies to provide so much record keeping to the agency, the chicken operations need to be doing the same. And I'll say one thing about this particular proposal in Oregon is that because there's three coming in, if it was just one, it would be problematic. Like there's, you know, a footprint and there's going to be impact, but when you have three coming in at the same time, there's going to be a cumulative impact and the impacts are going to be multiplied, right? And so our state agencies, as they stand right now, are not looking at this problem holistically. They're not looking at it from a cumulative impact perspective. And that is really problematic when you are going to be producing millions of tons of manure, I'm sorry, millions of pounds of manure annually from these birds.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. So earlier we had touched on who owns these operations, and you had said that Foster Farms, which is one, just one of the outfits is coming in, correct? Or are they behind all three?
So the farms, the operate, I'm not calling them farms because they're not farms. These are operations. They are factories. And these, when we first learned about these operations 2 years ago, it was the operations were Foster Farms. And and I think it's important for your listeners to understand that the way that this that these operations work is Foster Farms is the integrator. So they're the like parent company. And then they typically contract with local growers, and the local growers are responsible for building the barns, taking out all the loans associated with that. The local growers do not own the feed and they do not own the birds, but they own the chickens and they own the waste and they own the chickens that die. So it's this really interesting model, which is
such a deal. You get dead chickens and manure?
Exactly.
They also own the debt. Sorry, Sienna jumping in. They also own the debt for the barns and for everything else that they have to spend money on.
So
it's a really good deal for the integrators.
Yes.
So what's the, Carol, does that sound like a great deal for you? Is that something you want to get in on, dead chickens and manure and debt? That's sounding familiar. This sounding a different model and a different industry, but this is sounding very familiar to something that we've heard out here before. Okay, So
going on though, so that was all Foster Farms. And then about, I don't know, like 6 months ago, we learned that Foster Farms was purchased by this global holding company called Atlas Holdings. So now we don't know who really Atlas Holdings is because these holding and these holding companies and these equity firms have shells of shells of shells that are designed to, with not very much transparency in mind, to basically protect whoever is providing the money for these operations. So we don't know who is in our community trying to build these chickens and build these chicken operations and take our water. It's impossible to find out.
Interesting. Carla?
And I would like to say that one of these proposed operations is funded by money from North Carolina, which isn't even Atlas Holdings, which makes you feel like they're all in cahoots coming here, not just Atlas Holdings and Foster Farms.
Okay. So typically, large chicken factory operations have been in the South. I'm thinking of like Tyson, and all of a sudden they're moving west, which seems an odd situation. I don't even know how you would find this out, but what's going to happen to all these chickens? Are they being shipped abroad?
So again, this is not a very transparent system. So we don't exactly know what's happening to all of them, but what I can tell you is a couple of things. When Atlas Holdings took over Foster Farms, one of the things that they did right out of the gate was hire the former CEO of Tyson Chicken. And that CEO was quoted in the paper talking about like the need to expand poultry production on the West Coast. The other thing that we know is all of these birds are intended to go through a processing plant in Kelso, Washington, which in 2019, right before the onset of COVID, received its export certificate to China. So I can't tell you that the chickens that are being raised in my community and Starla's community are necessarily going to China or going to Northwest food shelves. But I can tell you that it feels a little bit that if you're looking at sort of like the bigger picture, and that there's an interest in expanding into the West Coast, and now there's a processing plant that has an export certificate to China, it could very well be that this is all being done for the export market.
Interesting. Interesting. Once again, we're having a lack of transparency. So it's my understanding from Sienna that Atlas Holdings it's Marty. Marty says Atlas Holdings is based in Greenwich, Connecticut, and is made up of 26 companies. So that's interesting. He's looking it up for us. Okay, well, we are going to take a quick break. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about legislative attempts to get control over water and manure waste and all the other stuff that goes along with factory farming of chickens. So stay with us. This is Setting the Record Straight. We'll be right back.
Need towing? Call Grumpy's Towing, 24-hour emergency service, providing jump starts, winching and recovery for autos, trucks, to boats. And Grumpy's Towing is equipped to service large trucks to semi-trucks. Grumpy's Towing is here to give you prompt service, and they work with most insurance companies. When you need help, remember Grumpy's Towing. That's the name for 24-hour service. Call 503-543-5533. Grumpy's Towing, 503-543-5533.
Attention veterans. As a veteran, there are certain benefits available to you. There are even benefits that extend to your loved ones. What will your family do when you pass? Will they know what to do? Who to call? Thankfully, there's a program that gets you the information you need and answers those questions for those you love. It's called the Veterans Memorial Program and was created by Columbia Funeral Home here in St. Helens. The number to call, 503-397-1154. So call Columbia Funeral Home today to receive your complimentary Veterans Final Wishes Organizer and free consultation to learn about your benefits. 503-397-1154.
Save your gas. Use our pass. If you commute to Portland every day, you're probably spending more in 1 week than a one-month pass with CC Rider. So check it out today. Call us at 503-366-0159. Save your gas. Use our pass.
NMLS 116407.
This is Matt McHugh from Cascadia Home Loans with a special announcement from Columbia Pacific Food Bank. Columbia Pacific needs volunteer drivers. Volunteer for a shift now. Shifts are just one day a week between 7:30 and 10:30 a.m. No CDL is required. You just need a driver's license. Go to cpfoodbank.org and click volunteer to help feed Columbia County now.
Why don't you just meet me in the middle? I'm losing my mind just a little.
It's Setting the Record Straight on KOHI with Melinda Bernard. Call the show now at 503-397-1600.
Why don't you just meet me in the middle? I'm losing my mind just a little.
I know. Why Kelly, you're going to jump in?
I will if you want. I mean, this is all so interesting.
And we're back. Carol and I are joined this morning. We are talking about factory farming. And joining us this morning are Starla Becker-Tillinghast. You are, ladies, you're not making it easy for me this morning. Sienna Chrisman and Kendra Kirambauskas. And we are talking about efforts about huge factory farming that is coming to Oregon, specifically the first of its kind is coming to SIO and potentially Aurora. But interestingly enough, these chickens that are slated to be farmed here, the 4.5 million chickens plus, will then be going to Kelso to be processed. And this processing plant also has licensure to ship abroad to China. So it's all interesting. Okay, so at break, we were chatting really briefly about what it looks like when you have 4.5 million chickens in one or 43 facilities. And as you know, all know, we've had outbreaks of avian flu here. So Kendra, what does that look like in a factory farm operation?
Yeah, so I mean, you have to be really trying to not pay attention to the news to realize that there are problems with bird flu popping up across the country. I think in the Midwest, you can go to your grocery store. There, the egg controversy of $10 a dozen eggs if you can find eggs. That's largely, there's a number of reasons for that, but one of which is the fact that many of the big poultry operations in the Midwest have succumbed to bird flu. So that is certainly of concern for the fact that, we've got these bird flu outbreaks, and yet they're bringing in these giant poultry operations into our communities. I'll let Starla talk a little bit about the flu, but one of the things that is of great concern to us is that for a variety of issues, not just flu, but that in Oregon, we don't require agricultural operations to mitigate their emissions. And so again, this is one of those antiquated laws, right? Where if you're in a different kind of industry that's not defined as agriculture, you have to be very careful about how much pollutants your facility releases. But in agriculture, we allow these operations to basically go completely unregulated and not mitigate their emissions at all. When you're talking about chickens, you're talking about massive amounts of ammonia pollution getting into our air and particulate matter and feather dust and everything else that could potentially impact the people that are living here, as well as getting into our water too, because that we know that from other states we've seen that a lot of the poultry operations have contaminated local waterways through the air. But flu is also a big deal, and I'm going to turn it over to Starla to talk a little bit about what she knows about flu.
Hi, Starla here. The flu that these chickens get is often given to them by contamination from the outside. For instance, wild birds. Wild birds aren't as affected by it, so actually wild birds present the danger. It's not so much that these birds give the wild birds the flu, but what happens when they get it, they have to die. And then their carcasses are composted or maybe buried somewhere. And then if they're in the compost situation, wildlife can eat those carcasses. There is a slight chance of transmission. There's a bear has gotten and died from avian flu. And it also has transmitted just a bit to people, not very much, but that also is a risk. So it's just like, it's a disaster waiting to happen, and I sure would not like to see a whole barn full of chickens composting in our community.
Okay.
And it's a high risk.
And Sienna, yeah.
Yeah, if I could just jump in to add a couple of things to that. This is Sienna Christman, also with State Innovation Exchange. So I could go so many different directions, but just to paint a little bit of a picture of the air, the emissions. If you're picturing these really huge barns, by and large, I believe this is still the technology, they have these really big fans on one end of them, or maybe both ends of them, like the biggest fans you can possibly imagine. And what those fans are doing is that they are blowing out. They're blowing air out with all of this, as Kendra was saying, dust and like feather dust, and there's bacteria on all of that. The chicken litter dust, just blowing that all out into the community. So that's, yes, as you said, gross. And there are no regulations for that. And then related to that, too, we have just seen what a global pandemic looks like, right, over the last few years. There is a lot about this industrial version of agriculture and raising livestock that basically, I've heard epidemiologists say, like, you truly could not create a better environment for breeding superbugs. So in hog factory operations, they feed them antibiotics just as a regular course of things. And what that's going to lead to and has led to already is antibiotic-resistant superbugs. So along the lines, too, that's happening with avian flu. It's happening with actually there are fungicide-resistant fungi that are also being bred, not so much in factory farms, but from wide-scale use of overuse of pesticides. This very large-scale corporate-driven agriculture is leading to a true public health emergency, even aside from like water quality and quality of food, etc. But when you just look at it like epidemiologically, we know what a pandemic is like, and there could be very easily one that is even worse coming as a direct result of the way that we are raising animals.
Thank you. And I wanted to go back to a point, and then Carol has a question. You had said maybe during break, we were talking about the pandemic and what that looked like for pork products. And I think you mentioned it on the air earlier in the day. And while we were not able to often source pork products such as bacon or pork chops or sausage, you had said it was actually, there was pork available, but it was going elsewhere. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, thanks. So that what we were talking about with the chickens from these proposed operations in Oregon, that it's likely that those chickens would be sent elsewhere, including being exported. That is totally the model that that these big multinational corporations are using. And we saw this very clearly in the pandemic during that early period when there was no pork on the shelves. Subsequent investigations showed pretty clearly that at that same time, when we in the U.S. were paying a fortune for bacon or just fully couldn't find it, the top three pork processors were actually exporting pork to China because the prices that they could get were higher there. And in fact, the reason that they were doing that and the reason that they're that the prices were higher there is because there had been the pork disease, whose name I can't remember. There had been a lot of the pigs had died in the previous year, in the previous season, because of disease. So this all totally ties together, right? Each of these pieces are totally connected.
Thank you. Carol, you had a question or a comment?
Well, I was just going to say this is sounding so familiar to Columbia County. And Klatskanai is a farm place, has been forever, as long as I've ever been here. And we have now a company moving in that's going to put a large biodiesel refinery on the edge of the Columbia. And what's interesting about it is the people who run it, who make the decisions, do not live here, have never lived here, are mainly from Texas and China. And it's frightening that they don't understand. I mean, they were going to put in trains. No trains. We're not going to. Well, we're putting in 400 cars in case when the river stops working, we really have to do that. And you realize that we've got people making decisions about what's happening in our state who have no idea that the river doesn't stop working. At least as far as I know, it never has. And it's scary to me. And it's sounding so familiar. It's just making me want to move, but I don't know where I'd go, because one of the things Oregon has is wonderful ag land. That's what it makes it attractive. It's all green. It isn't just waste. So anyway, that's just my piece.
So Kendra, I want to thank you, Carol. I want to move over to some of the where you're going. Your group is going, and it's not just you three. There's a lot of interested parties who are asking the legislature to take a closer look at this. How are those efforts going for you?
Yeah, thank you. So we have been, or our community has been organizing for 2 years, and I just want to like give your listeners just a little bit of a mind's eye about who our community is. Like, we're in rural Linn County, so we are not some bastion of Democratic progressive politics down here. Like, this is a Republican area. This is a community that has a lot of timber unity people. Like, this is, you know, these are farmers, loggers, ranchers, and we've been organizing. We have about 500 community members who have been active with us, and we're asking the legislature to pass a bill, Senate Bill 85, which calls for a moratorium on large tier two CAFOs. And these are large tier two CAFOs are the biggest of the big in Oregon. So these are, it's like more than 2,500 cows, more than 350,000 chickens, a large number of hogs, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, we are a community of food producers, of natural resource folks, and we have CAFOs in our community. And not all CAFOs are bad. CAFOs is an acronym for Confined Animal Feeding Operation. And they, it's a big definition which captures a lot of people. We're not concerned about the smaller CAFOs. They've been a part of our community for a long time. They're our neighbors, they're our friends, but we are concerned about these large corporations that are coming in. And that's why we're asking the legislature to pass a moratorium so we can hit the timeout button, don't let the genie out of the bottle, and actually address these antiquated laws that are on our books.
Okay, thank you. We're gonna take a quick break. We come back, we're going to see how those efforts are going and how other states have dealt with this very issue. So stay with us. This is Setting the Record Straight. We'll be right back.
Need towing? Call Grumpy's Towing, 24-hour emergency service, providing jump starts, winching and recovery for autos, trucks, to boats. And Grumpy's Towing is equipped to service large trucks to semi-trucks. Grumpy's Towing is here to give you prompt service, and they work with most insurance companies. When you need help, remember, Grumpy's Towing. That's the name for 24-hour service. Call 503-543-5533. Grumpy's Towing, 503-543-5533.
Attention veterans. As a veteran, there are certain benefits available to you. There are even benefits that extend to your loved ones. What will your family do when you pass? Will they know what to do? Who to call? Thankfully, there's a program that gets you the information you need and answers those questions for those you love. It's called the Veterans Memorial Program and was created by Columbia Funeral Home here in St. Helens. The number to call, 503-397-1154. So call Columbia Funeral Home today to receive your complimentary Veterans Final Wishes Organizer and free consultation to learn about your benefits. 503-397-1154.
Save your gas. Use our pass. If you commute to Portland every day, you're probably spending more in 1 week than a one-month pass with CC Rider. So check it out today. Call us at 503-366-0159. Save your gas. Use our pass.
NMLS 116407.
This is Matt McHugh from Cascadia Home Loans with a special announcement from Columbia Pacific Food Bank. Columbia Pacific needs volunteer drivers. Volunteer for a shift now. Shifts are just one day a week between 7:30 and 10:30 a.m. No CDL is required. You just need a driver's license. Go to cpfoodbank.org and click volunteer to help feed Columbia County now.
Why don't you just meet me in the middle? I'm losing my mind just a little.
It's Setting the Record Straight on KOHI with Melinda Bernard. Call the show now at 503-397-1600.
Why don't you just meet me in the middle? I'm losing my mind just a little. So why don't you just meet me?
And before we get back to our conversation, we did have a call, and our caller wanted to let me know that they believe that a large number of pork producing farms in the U.S. are currently owned by Chinese companies that have a lot of control. So that's an interesting and thank you for that. So Kendra, how are your efforts to get the legislature to listen to you? How is that going for you?
Yeah, thank you. Well, we're still sort of early in the legislative process. We do have, as I mentioned in the last segment, for your listeners, we do have a bill, Senate Bill 85, which calls for a moratorium on the largest of large of these CAFOs, concentrated or confined animal feeding operations in the state. We had a hearing last Monday, and there were over 100 folks that signed up to testify. And so Senator Golden, who's the senator who chairs the Senate Committee on Natural Resources, is going to be holding another public hearing this coming Monday. And we've had like over 500 folks weigh in and written testimony about this particular issue. And Senator Golden is taking written testimony until 8 a.m. on March 15th. So if your listeners want to weigh in, you can go to the legislature's website, you can look up Senate Bill 85, And you can make your thoughts known by providing written testimony.
Okay, thank you. So, Sarla, you've been looking into how other states are handling this. How are they tackling this issue? Because Oregon can't be the only state that's being targeted right now.
Thanks, Melinda. There's several ways they're handling it. Some of them have been caught unawares, and they're full of these chicken operations, and their state waters have been contaminated. The state of Oklahoma has been working on a lawsuit for almost 20 years. A ruling came in this January that they are saying that the integrators have been trespassing and public nuisance claims against the poultry producers, and they've decided that the integrators are responsible for this instead of the growers, and that's unusual and new.
What's an integrator?
The integrator is what we're talking about. Atlas Holding instead of the grower. They've damaged the Illinois River watershed that's in Oklahoma and Lake Tin Killer. They've been significantly damaged. They gave warning to when these operations set up in the UK, and the River Wye has now been contaminated even after it had warning. So it's bad when the damage is done, and then we're trying to decide what to do about that. Other states like Nebraska in 2017, that's when Costco came in, and already in 3 years they're showing the groundwater's contaminated. People are complaining about this, and there's so many complaints in Nebraska now that they have a bill before them that they're trying to stop nuisance complaints because they're getting so many they can't handle it, and they want to give the right to farm more power and no power to nuisance complaints. Some states, though, preemptively have good setbacks. Kansas has a 4,000 foot setback, and Texas has a half a mile setback. And when I asked my farmer relatives in Kansas, what do you think of this, they looked at me and they said, we would ask the neighbors, who would never put in something that would bother them, and besides that, we have setbacks. So that's how some states are mitigating the problem, and other states they're just full of these farms, and people are sick and they don't have any recourse at this time.
Okay. Wow, that's a lot to take in. Kendra, comment?
Yeah, and one thing I don't think we mentioned at the top of the hour, but so these facilities that are coming into our community, so it's egregious enough that they're coming into our community, but where they're looking to put these is really horrible. So one facility is 4.6 million chickens literally on top of Thomas Creek and less than a quarter of a mile from a grade school with little kids, a church, and a community center. And that grade school has been there for over 100 years. So like, this should underscore why these companies are a problem. They have no accountability to our community. They clearly don't care, because if they did care, they would not be putting in these kinds of operations in the middle of rural communities that like really are the only stronghold of community that we have out here in rural Oregon.
So I'm curious, are they using the line, this is the favorite line that's used out here a lot, is, oh, we're going to create jobs.
Oh, we've heard everything, Melinda. Yes, they claim that they're going to create jobs, but they're a completely automated operation. There are no jobs. There's not even going to be real construction jobs, because they have this like traveling band of workers that follow these companies around and put up the poultry barns. We've been laughing. They might buy some gravel. That's probably about it. And so, you know, this is not going to be an economic development boom for our area. It's certainly, you know, what is an economic development boom is our natural resources. When people want to come out and they want to swim in our creeks and they want to visit our farms and they want to, you know, enjoy some fresh air, that brings dollars to our community. These operations are going to come in and they're going to destroy our natural resources. Nobody's going to want to come here. We live in the covered bridge capital of Oregon. People come from all over the world to see our bridges. Nobody's going to come see our bridges when they can't breathe. So these operations, there is nothing good for our community about these operations. They're going to destroy our livability, they're going to destroy our community, they're going to take our wealth, and they're going to ship it to corporations that we don't even know who those corporations are.
Thank you, Sienna.
And just to add to that too, we've definitely heard some arguments about, oh, we need these really large scale operations to like feed our community and to feed those most in need. There are a number of problems with that argument, but one of them is just like looking back at where what we were just talking about like where, so these chickens and the meat that comes from them, they're not community controlled at all, right? They're likely destined for export. And that, so that's not feeding our community or our people at all. You know, to also say too, the food system as it is growing at this point in this really industrial model overall is not doing a very good job at feeding the world generally. We still have so much hunger. We have still millions and millions, hundreds of millions of people around the country and around the world who are going hungry. And increasing our investment in this kind of food producing operation has not actually helped. And what is helping instead is really like community-based food production. That around the world and around the country is really what's shown to address hunger and food insecurity and poverty and economic development.
Thank you. Carol? You're muted, Carol.
I just wanted to say, how do we make chickens sexy? Because we need to get politicians running on this, and most of them don't care. I mean, they just don't see it. Not to put them down, but we were just fighting something recently with this huge company, and what we're hearing from our federal legislators is it's all your electeds. They're the ones who make the decisions. They're the ones who let the things go on. And so how do we make it attractive? We need people to understand what's going on, and they don't.
Right. Well, it sounds like there are a couple of legislators that are taking the lead, right, Kendra?
Yeah, this is Kendra, and I'll just say that I think chickens are sexy. That's why we're having this conversation. You know, we all love chickens, we just don't love corporate chickens, right? And so we do have legislators. We actually had a tour of legislators come out to our community this past spring. I think that that is one of the reasons why we are having this conversation in the legislature. The biggest challenge for us, honestly, is the agribusiness lobby, who is pretending that, you know, we're trying to put small farms, family farms out of business, which is nothing more than a lie. And unfortunately, some of our Republican friends are taking that argument. And they, what I say to them is come out and meet our community members, come see what we're talking about. And if you are legitimately somebody who is a solutions oriented, let's help find a solution to stop this, because our rural communities in Oregon are really at risk.
I want to thank you all. We're out of time, and I just want to put one last thing in, is that I can't even imagine how they plan on transporting millions and millions and millions and millions of chickens through on I-5 or through our community to go to Kelso. So that's going to be another interesting part of it. But anyway, that is it for us today, and I just want to thank you again, Kendra, Sienna, and Starla, for taking the time to talk about this. Please feel free to come back and let us know how it's going. And once again, if you want to testify, you can get just type in OLIS or go to the Oregon State Legislature, click on Senate Bill 85, and you can link to where you can testify in person or written. Anyway, make it a great week. We will see you here next Friday. This has been Setting the Record Straight.
Why don't you just meet me in the middle? I'm losing my mind just a little.
You've been listening to Setting the Record Straight with Melinda Bernard on KOHI. Listen again next Friday here on AM 1600. You can email the show, kohi.radio@gmail.com, or email Melinda, strsradio@gmail.com.